From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want next time.
Everybody thinks show business.
Really, really,
all
bright
lights.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, we ask Tom Shadyac, the director behind Ace Ventura and Evan Almighty, if he's gone crazy or found sanity. He's abandoned the trappings of Hollywood, even the private jet, and turned his lens on spiritual matters. Plus, sales agent Stuart Ford takes the temperature of the international film market. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood.
I'm joined in the studio by my partner in banter, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim.
So, John, the Oscars, it's just about a week ago since the Oscars finally happened. And the ratings, not so good. The Oscars, the only awards show that did not get a bump in the ratings.
The Golden Globes were up, the Grammys were up, and the Oscars were down about 10% and 11% with the key kind of young adult demographic.
Which is bad. 37.6 million people roughly watching, but not good enough to match, you know, strong years. And when you have a lineup like they had this year with two young hosts who didn't necessarily get the best reviews, and you know, a bunch of commercial movies, including Black Swan, which certainly appealed to a younger audience. I don't know how are they going to improve?
That's a fundamental question. How do you fix the show? I mean, they said they were going to try to attract a younger audience, and the first film clip was Gone with the Wind, and and there's no way to say this politely, but then you bring out Kirk Douglas as one of the first presenters. I mean, but I don't think the show itself is the only problem. I think the timing of the show is a fundamental issue, and I think this year proved it. You could argue there wasn't a lot of suspense in the ceremony, but I think the reason there wasn't a lot of suspense is because we had seen so many other award shows and so many other events where the outcome was predetermined. So it felt like it was an afterthought. It felt like it came a month later than it should.
Yes, punditry is not helping. And I don't know what they do about that either. And they've also got the problem that if you wanted to make it tighter and shorter and get rid of certain awards and move them out of that night, there's going to be big groups of people, professionals in the industry who work hard and will object, and it probably can't happen.
I agree. And the Grammys, at least, is a performance show where they hand out a handful of awards. This is an award show where they hand out a lot of awards. And there's, I don't know how you make film a performance entertainment show. But I have to say, and I wrote a little bit about this, you have three winners, Natalie Portman, Christian Bale, and Aaron Sorkin, who go on national television, an audience of hundreds of millions of people, and they start thinking they're agents and managers and publicists. Nobody cares about these people. It's not entertaining to watch. It's irrelevant. And then you had the president of the Academy, Tom Shurick, come out with Ann Sweeney from ABC
and
talk about
weird.
The extension of their broadcast deal. I mean, this is classic Hollywood navel-gazing. This isn't even interesting inside the Kodak Theater, and that you're trying to make a compelling, entertaining television broadcast, and you're thanking your agent and talking about your ABC broadcast deal. That's deadly television, and nobody cares.
You said it. Meanwhile, the winner in the Best Picture and other categories, The King's Speech. And, you know, it's kind of an awkward thing because on the eve of the Academy Awards ceremony, the Motion Picture Association of America and its ratings board issued a waiver allowing the Weinstein Company, which released the film here in the United States, to issue a new version, a PG-13 version. We've talked about the controversy before with all the F-bombs in the movie that caused it to be rated R. A lot of people thought that was a great injustice to the film, including you, John, repeatedly said
yes,
so
correct.
On our air. And now they're going to get to... Well, they're going to get to a re-release this film as a PG-13 thing. They're not going to bleep the F word, which would be really disconcerting, but they're going to mute it. And, you know, we've had Tom Hooper on the show, the director on our show, and he objected very vehemently to the R rating on his movie. I don't think he was obviously willing to change the movie to get away from the R rating. And, you know, I saw him on Academy Awards night at the Governor's Ball. I asked him, how do you feel about this? And he just said very tersely, I haven't seen it.
And probably doesn't plan on it either.
Well, no, he was planning to, but he walked away. You know, he didn't want to talk about it. I think it's very awkward for them.
Well, what's happening clearly is that the Weinstein Company thinks they can get more money out of the box office by withdrawing the R-rated version and bringing back the PG-13 version. But I would argue even if the R-rated version stays out, it's going to get to $150 million. It's going to pass Juno. It's going to pass Slumdog Millionaire. This is a runaway hit. The MPAA said usually you have to wait 90 days if you withdraw a film and bring back another version of it into the market, and they're waiving that rule so that the audience won't be confused. Again, MPAA made every possible mistake on this, so maybe this is a small way to fix the mistake of giving it an R rating to begin with.
But what's awkward is the movie that won the Oscar was the R-rated version. Nothing was, you know, muted out on that one. So how long do the Weinsteins wait? As we're recording this, they have not said how long they're going to wait before they pull out the R-rated version that won the award and replace it with an adulterated version of the movie. And I think it's sort of not the best gift in the world, given the timing that the MPAA could have given to the Weinstein Company to repay them for trying to fight on this.
No, and I don't think it reflects well on the Weinstein Company's relationship with its filmmaker. I mean, adulterated is exactly the right word. This is a critical scene that they're changing. I won't say cutting because they're going to just silence it. It's a critical scene. It is integral to the film, and however they're going to modify it, it's going to be less of a movie. It's not going to be the perfect version of that film, and it's a shame that audiences will see that and the Weinstein Company is going to go out and promote that film.
I will mention that former Senator Chris Dodd is going to take over as the head of the MPAA, and I will go on the record with a bold prediction. I think the Academy is finally ready after this year with a number of embarrassments, such as the King's Speech, reversing itself on Blue Valentine, giving an R rating to the Tillman story, where, again, the F word was included in a very non-sexual context. I think they're going to revisit the rating system at last.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think what they're going to do is create a new rating between PG-13 and R and maybe make the R rating a little bit more grown up and then a lesser version of the R rating for people who can tolerate an F-bomb or two.
Well, we will soon find out. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Tom Shadyac established himself as an A-list director with his first feature film, Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. That movie cost $15 million and grossed more than $100 million worldwide. Shadyac went on to direct Jim Carrey in Liar Liar and Bruce Almighty. He's worked with other big-name comics, directing Eddie Murphy in The Nutty Professor, Robin Williams in Patch Adams, and Steve Carell in Evan Almighty. For years, Shadyac had a deal at Universal, and of course he made a lot of money. But he also felt that something was missing. He started giving away his money to worthy causes, and as he contemplated his impact on the environment, he started biking to work. But Shadyac really got serious after a mountain biking accident in 2007 when he suffered what's known as post-concussion syndrome. For months, he had mood swings, an extreme sensitivity to light and sound, plus a constant ringing in his ears. He began to confront his mortality and found that he wanted to address the big questions of life, as he explains in his new documentary, I Am.
We are asking some of today's significant minds, authors, journalists, religious leaders, historians, academics, etc., what's wrong with our world and what can we do about it? Most importantly, what we could do about it.
In the film, Shadyac talks with thinkers including Bishop Desmond Tutu and Howard Zinn. He puts some of their ideas into practice. He downsizes from a big estate in Pasadena to a 1,000-square-foot prefab home in a Malibu trailer park. He gives away or sells many possessions and ponders what really makes him happy.
I'd made movies before about themes that were important to me, but this was more about the theme of my life and what I was really, really passionate about. And the bike accident simply compelled me to talk about it in a piece of art, in a film, and it turned out to be my first documentary.
You made Evan Almighty, and I remember hearing at the time that this was, you know, that you had Christian values and you were trying to express them through film. Was that accurate?
Well, it's a little inaccurate because I think we'd have to define what the word Christian means. If it means that I think you're wrong and I'm right, then I'm not. You know, I was always moved by the moral teachings of Jesus, not in a dogmatic way, you know, and that always felt like it had a power to me my whole life. And I tried to model my life after those principles of loving my neighbor, et cetera. And I found those same principles reflected, you know, they were the baseline of all faiths. You know, I found the beauty of Gandhi's life and Martin Luther King and others. So, you know, I think as an artist, it's important to put in films what we value. So, you know, my films like Liar Liar, Patch Adams, Bruce Almighty, they've been kind of little parables. And we have a lot of fun inside those parables, and we really entertain. And when we kind of soften the clay, if you will, you know, we're able to maybe leave something of impact.
So when you, even before the bike accident, and when you're in that space of trying to have, you know, make movies that are parables, did that set you apart hugely in Hollywood? Because, you know, I've been here for a while and, you know, not a lot of Christian discussion in Hollywood.
Well, yeah, I think the current God may be cash. So as long as my films did well, you know, as long as I was speaking to an audience, you know, I think people were fine with it. And also my films are not religious. They're not about dividing. They're about the intersection of all faiths.
But did you feel like when you're dealing with the Hollywood, you know, the executives and everything, that they somewhat regarded you as a little bit different because of the spirituality?
Well, yeah, I think the people that know me, you know, the people I've worked with, you know who I am and know what I represent and know what's important to me. And I think they're good with that. They've not ostracized me in any way. They've kind of invited me in. And I think it's because I see spirituality in things that we might not consider spiritual. I think Ace Ventura is one of the most spiritual films I've done. It's unless you become like these little children, you know, that's scripture to me. You know, the fact that you can make someone laugh in a childlike state is beautiful to me. So I think show business has embraced that. I think we've been doing that in films for forever. Our films stand for something, you know. Bob Zemeckis's films stand for something, you know. Danny Boyle's films stand for something. Peter Weir's films stand for something. And I hope my films have stood for something.
Well, you're part of the most spiritual episode ever of The Business. So you can take credit for that. We don't normally talk about spirituality, and here we are.
We're going to go into an ohm now for a couple minutes. If we can get everyone to breathe
on the freeway.
That
would be good for a lot of people. Okay, so yeah. But then you have this accident and you really start to rethink your career at that point. Again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, so tell us.
Well, it's not rethink my career again. It's rethink my life. And that had happened long before the accident. But the accident said, Tom, you've got to talk about it. I had been waking up to certain ideas, again, hypocrisies in my life. I wanted to share that and then let people do with it what they may. You see, if I can give you the basic idea, it's that I think we have a fundamentally symptomatic culture. We look at things on television as in a symptomatic way. We see war. We see the gap between the rich and the poor. We see hunger, et cetera, the environmental crisis. And we never look at the root cause. And I had noticed that there was this root cause emerging in various disciplines, science, in philosophy, from some of our poets, academics. And I wanted to see if others were seeing this fundamental root endemic cause and make a film about it. Because I think if you can talk about the root cause that may cause these other problems, then we can actually take a corrective course.
I mean, how did you finance this film in which you were going to talk about these things? This is not something where you went to Universal and said, I've got a hot one for you, right?
I've got the next Ace Ventura for you. Ace goes on a quest to find the meaning of life.
Well, you know, based on what I've read about Jim Carrey and written about Jim Carrey, he could very well go on a quest to find the meaning of life.
Well, yeah, Jim is a deep cat, man. I mean, you know, Bruce Almighty came out of conversations that Jim and I and Steve Odekirk and I had for many, many, many years. Steve's our wonderfully talented writing partner and No. You're looking at the studio. I simply pared down that crew. You know, I went from a crew of about 400 to a crew of about 4. I think at its most bloated, we got to 6 or 7. And we just started out. I got a camera and I said, all right, how much are these flights to take us to Boston to interview Noam Chomsky and Howard Zinn and Elizabeth Sartoris? And we started that way, and we've had a lot of cooperation in the post-production end of things, from Peter Gabriel to Will.i.am and the Black Eyed Peas, who've given us, you know, music at incredible rates, to John Debney, the great composer. Without their cooperation, we couldn't have got it done, but we got it done at an incredibly reasonable number, and now I'm trying to market it.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with director Tom Shadyac. For years, he had a deal at Universal, and he directed big comedies like Bruce Almighty and The Nutty Professor. His new movie is quite different. In the documentary I Am, he talks with great minds about big problems in an effort to identify the root causes of suffering. Shadyac has been pondering such questions as he's reevaluated his priorities in both his career and his life.
You know, one of the first things I did was I realized I was hurting the environment, and yet I didn't realize how much more I was taking that I felt was my personal share. And so, I bought a Prius like everybody else, and one of my cousins back in Virginia said, "Tom, it's interesting, you drive a Prius and then you fly privately. I've heard that one private flight uses as much energy as a family of four uses in an entire year." And I went, "Wow, is that true?" And I found out that it was, if not true, darn close to true, and I stopped flying privately. I just thought, well, I'm not a celebrity. Nobody's going to bother me on an airplane. It's something that I certainly can do, and Universal was generous enough to allow me to give my jet allowance to charities. That's one of the things. And then I looked around, and I had, you know, I lived in a 17,000-square-foot three-home estate in Pasadena, and I thought, wow, this seems a little much, you know, and I began to question that. And so I shifted that and I moved to a community in Malibu that the average home is around 1,000 square feet.
It's like a mobile home, right?
Yeah, it's a prefab home park, whatever you call it, but it's a beautiful place. I mean, no one should feel sorry for me. I opened up to this idea of community and neighbors. And but then the big shift for me was when I realized that the way I was doing my economy in my life was not only hypocritical, but I felt destructive. And what we're taught, I think, not just in our business, but in any business, is to take all that you can, declare yourself more valuable, because I had a certain, quote, valuable talent, declare yourself more valuable, stand on top of the heap, and ask for more and as much as you can. And I simply didn't find that at all reflected in nature. Everything in nature takes what it needs, and that's it. It's part of a fabric. You know, it knows, the lion knows it needs the other gazelles, so it doesn't take every gazelle. But I was a guy that was taught to take as many gazelles as I could. And I think that that is a fundamental problem. And so when I started applying that natural way to my own life, I didn't like what I saw.
That is so contrary to the way Hollywood functions. The whole thing in Hollywood is to measure that which someone else has gotten. Not what most people get, what anyone else has gotten, the best one that has ever been gotten, yeah, and try to get a little more, or at least same.
Yeah, I think Hollywood is just an outgrowth of that cultural message that has kind of, grown as a cancer unaware. But I can tell you that my life, when I call these into questions, I just buzz with a greater sense of joy and purpose now that I realize what I need. My needs are simple. And so whatever else is generated through my art, it can go to what I would call a higher purpose, a social purpose, to helping those others be educated, to be fed, to help heal the natural world. You know, that to me is a rich life.
Well, I get what you're saying. I just wonder, do you think your neighbors in this prefab home place, when you're not around, say, "Get a load of this guy. He could live in a 17,000-square-foot compound." I mean, do you think they're sort of wondering what is up with that behind your back, or they get it?
If I'm nuts, I think no, but certainly not in my community. There's certainly many people who think I'm nuts. In fact, right now we're adding to that list.
So among the people who think you're nuts, are your agent and your lawyer on the list? Do they?
Let's give them a call.
I'd love to, actually.
So I think that, you know, maybe less and less and less, because they've known me. I've known my wonderful agent, Dan Aloni, for years and years and years. And I've known Bruce Raymer. These are two dear friends.
That's your lawyer, Bruce Raymer.
Bruce Raymer. I like to say the shark in Jaws was named after Bruce. Don't mess with him.
Okay. He is Steven Spielberg's lawyer also, yes.
He's a wonderful human being, and as is Dan. And I think that maybe initially, because we've all been a part of that cultural paradigm that says, get more, get more, get more. And when someone says, no, I don't think it's about more, their first reaction may be, hey, wait a second, he's going off the deep end. I don't think they think that anymore. I think they see a simplicity and a kind of power that has inhabited me, and I think that they're interested now.
Coming up after a short break, Tom Shadyac says he'd still direct a big studio movie, but with one caveat. You're listening to The Business from KCRW and KCRW.com.
Oh,
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. The new documentary, I Am, which opens in Los Angeles this Friday and in New York next week, tracks Tom Shadyac's evolution from A-list Hollywood director surrounded by the trappings of wealth to seeker on a spiritual path. Long inspired by the teachings of Jesus, Shadyac says his movies, like Ace Ventura, Liar Liar, and Bruce Almighty, were all parables that conveyed moral lessons through humor. But after he was injured in a bike accident in 2007, Shadyac realized he needed to make a movie focused directly on the big questions.
You know, a lot of people ask me if I'll ever make a studio movie again,
right.
You know, like, and I value so deeply what we do, what I attempt to do, what others I know do so well in show business, those directors I mentioned, Danny Boyle and Peter Weir and others, I think is a form of prayer. So if a studio handed me a script that just spoke to my soul, I would be knocking on the door of Amy Pascal or Ron or whoever and say, listen, I have a vision for this. Can we figure out a way to make this together?
And you'd be like, you don't need to worry about my fee.
Yeah, I would actually.
Okay, just checking.
I would actually. I mean, I would try to say to them, you know, look, is there a way that, you know, we can create a profit holder, if you will, that would go immediately into a cause for others? Could we put it in a foundation so that you only have to pay me Directors Guild minimum for now? That's all I would at most would need. But could we create something so that this piece of art could actually go to a higher purpose? And yeah, that's kind of how I do it. So if I could make a pitch right now for those scripts to come in.
I'm sure, you know what? Beware what you wish for, I will say.
And, you know, I do want to say, too, that I Am as a nonprofit. You know, the film that I've just completed that's coming out in L.A. on March 11th, New York, March 18th, is a nonprofit. So I set up that exact structure because I was the studio head. I had a good meeting with myself. Everyone on the film was paid what they need. Those with greater needs got a higher salary, and I had to take DGA minimum. But
so did people come in and say, like, I've got six kids, and therefore I need more?
Well, I know them. They're all friends of mine.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah, one you know, a friend of mine has a child in school, and of course that would be a higher need than someone like I've got two young staffers that just came out of, you know, university. So they didn't need as much. But every cent that's generated from the film won't even go to pay me back. It'll go right into a nonprofit, and then we're going to hopefully we're going to start by freeing a village. There's 27 million slaves in the world, and we're going to hopefully free a village with our first profits and then do, I hope, other things depending on how many people show up.
So having been on this journey, and you were, you know, very established as an A-list director, what are the traits that make for an A-list director, and do you think you could still do that?
Well, I think sexiness is one, and that may just be gone.
That never goes away.
No, it may be gone. You know, look, I approach movies the same way. So the same guy who made Ace Ventura made I Am. The same sensibilities are in there. So when you see I Am, you're going to laugh more than you laugh in a normal documentary, you know. You're going to see a documentary that moves because I have a sense of pace. You know, I think movies, the root word is move in movies, so I like them to move. But again, I haven't lost any sensibilities, I don't think. If anything, I think I've gained another layer. And I think I can certainly speak to a wide audience, especially if what I'm intuiting is happening, which is I think our audience, which is the public, is shifting. And I think that films that speak to that shift, which is films that talk about who we are as humans and how we can get through this kind of mess of things, are going to be explosive in the future. And I think that I feel like I'm pitching myself. But I think that I could do films that speak to that audience. We'll see. I think I Am may be in the zeitgeist. I think we may be blessed with a zeitgeist moment.
Tom Shadyac is a film director. His credits include Evan Almighty and Ace Ventura. His latest movie is the documentary I Am. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
Appreciate it. It's been a pleasure.
A few weeks ago, film distributors from around Europe gathered in Germany for the Berlin Film Festival and the European Film Market. Berlin is the smallest of three such markets that take place each year, behind the American Film Market and Cannes. It's still a place where a lot of business is done, and given the importance of the overseas audience to American movies these days, wooing foreign buyers is more critical than ever. This year, the European Film Market in Berlin came just a couple of weeks after an exuberant Sundance Film Festival, where lots of movies sold well. maybe even better than they should have. We checked in with Stuart Ford, CEO of IM Global, a powerhouse film sales and distribution company, who represented, among other movies in Berlin, Kevin Smith's Red State, and a Madonna-directed movie about Wallace Simpson, the commoner who caused Edward VIII to abdicate as King of England. Ford said both those films sold well, but there wasn't exactly the feeding frenzy of Sundance.
Now, Sundance is one of those sort of trading posts where every independent film under a certain budget aims itself. So it so happened that this year there was this melee of new films and frantic buying by U.S. distributors. Berlin, less so. And that there were very few new projects or projects for the distribution community to get excited about.
What kind of movies generally were... I mean, you said the sales were sluggish. What sorts of things sold? Was there any kind of identifiable... trait?
The identifiable trait is at the moment that with the industry in this state of evolution with, you know, DVD leveling off, VOD having not quite replaced it, theatrical box office actually quite strong around the world, piracy taking more of a grip in a number of territories, there's an uncertainty amongst distributors which is leading them towards basically taking safe bets.
Do we know what safe bets are? I've always thought that was the thing about the movie business.
Well, I would say very commercial mainstream films. Berlin as a platform has always been a fantastic breeding ground for all sorts of cinema, very sort of political cinema, art house cinema, as well as commercial films. But in the marketplace right now, it's commercial material that really gets the buyers excited because that's what they need in order to survive in what are challenging times. So probably the biggest selling movie in Berlin in terms of dollars was another film that we had, which was a Sylvester Stallone action movie. You know, Sly is a huge icon around the world and still has a huge following internationally. He's coming off the back of a $250 million grossing hit film. Foreign distributors like those movies. So, you know, we did a huge amount of business with that. There was a film, a remake of Gambit in the marketplace with Cameron Diaz and Colin Firth, who's obviously at sort of the peak of his popularity right now. I believe that was a big seller. Not much else you would say really was flying off the shelves.
Are there specific genres that certain countries go for? I mean, action is obviously big in a lot of places.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, action is what is maybe the only genre that works pretty much universally. Something like a romantic comedies can work very well in the UK and Australia and Latin America, but can be very challenging in France or Italy or certainly in Asia. Horror, which is, you know, commercially a very strong genre in the US, again, works in parts of the international marketplace, definitively does not work in others. And again, that's part of what a business like mine does is help guide these films into the right hands around the world, depending on what the local appetite is.
The famous quote was, you know, sell it, don't smell it. Do you find that you have to just plug up your nose a certain amount of the time?
Fortunately, no. I mean, we've gotten to a place where we only really get behind movies that we believe in and where we feel there genuinely is an audience and a marketplace for the film around the world, or at least in much of the world. So I can honestly say there's nothing that we're involved with that we don't love and we don't think is terrific. Some films are harder to get across than others. That's part of the game and it's part of what we love about it.
Stuart Ford is the CEO of IM Global, an international sales and distribution company. Thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. The executive producer is Matt Holzman. To leave a comment about today's show, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness, where you can also stream and podcast the show and check out past episodes. And we're on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/kcrwthebusiness and like us. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.